Welcome to the Senator Jim Podcast.
Fake news.
By a dishonest army of propagandists in the corporate media.
Have you read the bill? Hell no, you haven't.
I'm worried about the fact that our workers are seeing a decline in their standard of living.
This isn't real. This is a TV show. This is clickbait. This is theater.
The distinguished senator from California is recognized.
Hey, welcome to the Senator Jim Podcast, your place to get informed, entertained, and become your own political powerhouse. I'm Senator Jim Stanjic. I'm the 101st Senator, and as always, with me today, I've got Bulgarian Amy.
Thank you, nice.
Sorry about that. Would you prefer Eastern European Amy?
It's just Amy.
As well as Mordecai Justice.
Can I call you Virginia Jim?
So, to me right now, you guys look like two tired constitutional researchers. So, my intention is to have this podcast out to February 8th. And I guess we'll see if I've accomplished that or not. I'm not confident that we've been able to produce these quick enough. So our topic today is something that's been very interesting to me, and that is the case for the disqualification of President Donald Trump under the 14th Amendment, Article 3. Section 3? I forgot. Article 3, Section 14? It's so confusing. Anyway, I asked Amy to look at the legal issues, and I asked Mordecai to look at the factual issues. And since the law is the application of the law under a certain specific concrete set of facts, Amy is going to start by discussing issues of the law, and Mordecai is going to discuss the issues of the concrete set of facts.
Next time, Mordecai gets to take the law. I spent more time than I want to.
This is why I find this case so fascinating. Maybe I'm the only one that's seen Marvel and heard of the guy named Thanos, but this is absolutely what I think is going to happen.
We used the stones to destroy the stones. It nearly killed me. But the work is done. It always will be. I am inevitable.
It seems to me that in this case, the Supreme Court is going to use the Constitution to destroy the Constitution. So whatever way you look at this, whether you feel strongly that he violated the 14th Amendment, he should be disqualified, and whether you feel strongly that, you know, this case is just ridiculous, it shouldn't be brought, and I know there's people that feel strongly on either side, I think either one, you might feel like the Constitution is being used to destroy the Constitution. So I really wanted to dive into it, and let's look at some of the details. So Amy, I'm going to ask you the first question. Does the Constitution disqualify Donald Trump from being president?
Yes. Under the 14th Amendment, Section 3, Donald Trump is ineligible to be president. This is what both Colorado and Maine have already ruled.
Okay, so just start with the five W's. I know. We'll see how long it takes. See if you can go in like 2 minutes. Who, what, where, when, and why, and maybe add a how.
Very simply, the what is. There is a section in the 14th Amendment of the Constitution that prevents insurrectionists. This section prevents insurrectionists from holding another office.
Hey, Mordecai, can you read that? Can you read that section of the 14th Amendment, Section 3?
No person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or elector or president and vice president or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States, member of any state legislature, or as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. But Congress may, by a vote of 2/3 of each house, remove such disability.
Okay, so I think we should be clear here that it doesn't just disqualify insurrectionists. It disqualifies insurrectionists who have previously taken an oath to support the Constitution of the United States.
So, are you telling me that if I was a January 6th protester and I wasn't in office, I could still hold office since I didn't hold office?
Yes, that is correct. Some people are treating this like any protester could be disqualified. But it's only someone who previously took an oath to support the Constitution.
Okay, so let's focus on Colorado, because it's really, Colorado is a state that's more out in front of this. Colorado is the one that's got the Supreme Court case going.
Senator, there are so many rabbit holes that we can go down. Let me try to explain it very simply. What is that Colorado did use this part of the Constitution to disqualify Donald Trump from the Republican primary ballot? Colorado is also the Colorado Supreme Court. Colorado is the where. And when was at the end of the year?
So to get this straight, Colorado has disqualified President Donald Trump from the primary ballot because to do so would violate the 14th Amendment, Section 3 of the United States Constitution. How is this possible?
How have they done this? It seems how is an issue. Even though we've had this in the Constitution for over 150 years, it's not fair how.
So have people been disqualified before? Were other folks disqualified after the Civil War?
In the aftermath of the Civil War, 6 people were disqualified for holding office in a Confederate state, serving in the Confederate Army, or being sympathetic to the Confederacy.
So if this is only applied to the Civil War, then only these 6 people have been disqualified from office over the entire history of America?
This is also interesting. This is also interesting. 2 additional people were disqualified from office. One was indicted under the Espionage Act in 1919. Congress did not see 10, citing Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. He was not convicted when they refused to see 10. More relevant, so in September 2020, this man, Corey Griffin, he was removed as a county commissioner in New Mexico. He was removed for his actions on January 6th.
So a county commissioner was removed under the Constitution?
Yes, county commissioner.
Here's my question. Did Trump, did his campaign, did all these people that are arguing now, did they argue that this man can't be disqualified under the Constitution, this county commissioner?
No, they really didn't care about this sign. He was let out to dry.
So let me get this straight. A case that has direct bearing on the Trump case, somebody was already removed from office under the Constitution due to January 6th, due to participating in the January 6th riots.
There's one big issue here in the what in the how. No one has ever removed the president. Keep in mind, potentially, this could be used to remove the president or at least disqualify someone from holding the president or at least disqualify someone from holding the office of the president.
Okay, yeah, I understand that, but I don't see how this is any different than the age or the citizenship qualification.
Yes, this is just like the age qualification and the citizenship qualification for president, except it isn't because it's the how. At no time has anyone even considered utilizing this part of the Constitution on the president. And there's a lot of questions about how, for instance, elections are prescribed to be run by the states. This is why Colorado and Maine have taken Trump off the ballot. There are other states who have not struck Trump because some of the rules don't apply. Let's say the Republican Party, and we've spoken about this. What if they wanted to elect Tom Holland? And Tom Holland neither meets the age requirements nor citizenship requirements.
Yeah, but that's easy to see. That's not hard. Age and citizenship is black and white. We're talking about engaging in insurrection.
Yes, and what body determines that? How does that get before a judge? I am going to pivot to a bit of a history lesson. The drafters of this part of the Constitution would be aghast that Jefferson Davis could be elected president at a future time. There is no doubt in my mind, or Robert Lee. They felt that anyone who held public office, had public office holders who then engage in insurrection, could not be trustworthy in the Constitution.
Okay, so being mindful of our time here, does disqualifying Trump from holding office, does that square with the history of this part of the Constitution?
Absolutely. To twist the history of this and say this clause bans Confederates from holding any position in the United States government except the president. Think about it. Presidential electors cannot have been former Confederates. I will leave discussion of the facts regarding Trump and insurrection to Mordecai. This is an important point. There were three amendments passed in the aftermath of the Constitution. The intent was to rebuild the nation after the Civil War. And one of the concerns was to ensure former oath breakers, insurrectionists, not qualified for serving in any form of the United States government under the Constitution. This clause, section three, was intended to ensure that no one thought about pursuing a similar insurrection after the Civil War. In fact, there was a concern that Jefferson Davis could be reinstated as a United States senator.
So you're telling me that the intent of the Congress that ratified this part of the Constitution, part of their motivation was to ensure Jefferson Davis was not a senator nor a candidate for any office again, including presidency?
Yes, precisely. Even after the loss of the Civil War, the Southern states still had an issue with slavery. Not going to dive into this rabbit hole, the massive grant of amnesty to former Confederates proved problematic in the South during the later years of the 1800s. Granting that amnesty in 1872 bent the arc of power back to the insurrectionists in their state. Even in later years, the 1870s, amnesty bills were blocked because it would mean potentially Jefferson Davis should run for president.
Okay, so Jefferson Davis is dead. The Confederacy is dead.
Okay, I know you say that, but there's still a lot of people sympathetic to the Confederacy. Wasn't there a Confederate flag in the Capitol building on January 6th?
In this post-Civil War time that we're living with, what does that mean for the disqualification amendment?
That amendment still provides a strong disincentive for public office holders to engage in insurrection, to war with the United States. And the historical context, it is pretty clear that Section 3 has always been interpreted to include the president.
So can you share with us and talk a little bit about who are the people that are working to disqualify President Trump and enforce the 14th Amendment?
The main plaintiffs in Colorado are members of the Republican Party. However, there is a patchwork of scholars who have laid and are increasingly bolstering their arguments. It is not just liberals, people who you would think would hate Trump. The most prominent from a conservative side is William Bald and Michael Polson. Professor Bald is from the University of Chicago Law School. Professor Boston is from the University of St. Thomas Law School in Minnesota. They have gained a lot of attention because they used a very conservative approach. They call it the originalist approach to congressional interpretation. Using this method, they actually looked at the law and fact, and they concluded that Trump should be disqualified from the ballot.
Okay, how long would it take you to explain this professor, these conservative, how long would it take you to explain their papers, their logic?
The nature of constitutional interpretation and their paper. It would take too long. I want to also say that they relied heavily on constitutional historians. Two prominent ones are Mark Graber, a Regents professor at the University of Maryland Carey School of Law.
Okay, what's a Regents professor?
I don't know. And I didn't want to dive into that. Another prominent professor, Gerard Magioka, he is a professor at the Indiana University McKinney School of Law. And I want to point out the lawyers making the legal case have an impressive background. Let's talk about Rald, Yale Law School, and clerk for Chief Justice Roberts. Olson is also a Yale Law School graduate. Professor Graber has been a visiting faculty member at Harvard, Yale, the University of Virginia, and other universities. Professor Magioka is a Stanford graduate and also went to Yale Law School. It's also very important to mention that Ward and Paulson are members of the Federalist Society. For those who do not know, the Federalist Society is a right-wing, conservative, and libertarian legal organization.
So again, I think what you're talking about is that these arguments about disqualifying Trump, they're not just being put forward by partisans on the Democratic side. These arguments are being put forward by people who should, would, and people would think of them as allies to a conservative Republican president.
Exactly.
Okay, you spend a lot of time on the what. So what? Is there a case for the what? The what not? Like the, okay, you talked about what, but what about the other side? What about the what not? Is there a case that the 14th Amendment is not disqualifying?
So this is America. This is law. Who are the most hated people in the law?
Bobby wants chasing lawyers. The ones who pretend that they can turn your fender bender into a $2 million payout.
That is close, but everyone hates defense attorneys. Every OJ Simpson gets Johnny Cook's ring. We didn't have the Kardashians without Jay.
Okay, so yes, there's always defense attorneys, and I guess I would ask you, what are the defense attorneys arguing?
So there are defense attorneys for this proposition. From a legal standpoint, there are a few arguments. These really don't have much merit in the context of the 14th Amendment, Section 3, the main argument. This was actually accepted by the Colorado District Court judge.
Okay, so you said that there was no merit, but it was accepted by the district court judge in Colorado?
In her ruling, Judge Wallace, this is the original trial court, Judge Wallace ruled that Trump had engaged in insurrection. But she ruled that the 14th Amendment, Section 3, does not cover the president. She ruled that the presidency is not an office of the United States, and the president is not an officer of the United States. This argument is a hyper-technical legal argument.
So you think that this argument that was accepted by a judge is not a valid legal argument?
It is an argument that a lawyer will make to win the case, but it is not an argument that withstands the scrutiny of history. When you read 14 Amendment Section 3, do you see the word president there?
Nope. It doesn't say president.
Okay, no. I didn't hear him say the word president. It doesn't say president.
I believe the district court judge did not want to be the sole judge making this argument in court case. She says as much in her opinion.
Okay, you know what word's also missing from this is county commissioner, right? It doesn't call out a county commissioner either.
That's right. It doesn't say county commissioner. The Colorado Supreme Court reversed her finding of law. It said that it's the president is plainly an officer in the office of the president of the United States, that it's covered by the phrase hold any office, civil or military, under the United States.
Okay, so is there a viable argument against the president being included under Section 14?
I would highlight three arguments the whatnot side makes. Kurt Lash from the University of Richmond, he submitted a paper that basically says the words are not so clear. He puts a lot of faith in the fact that at one time a draft of Section 3 unambiguously included the president and a vice president. It listed them. And then those words got taken out of the final version.
Because they felt like it wasn't needed. But was that discussed by the drafters at the time?
The question was asked on the congressional floor. there is some discussion, and if covered, if the president is covered by the clause, hold any office under the United States.
And why is this discussion not relevant?
Because the discussion destroys an argument. If they were to concede that the president is an office and an office holder, it would destroy their case. However, the Supreme Court has not provided much weight to such floor speeches and debates. They typically would like to actually go to the text of the laws.
So one argument is that the text is not so clear. President was in the clause at first, and then it was removed.
Yes, and the counter to that is that president is not needed, except you asked. A clause doesn't say county commission, does it? No, it's not needed. The other case, the Nothow, is by Professors Seth Barrett Tillman and Joshua Blackman. Seth Tillman is from Ireland. Again, we are talking about highly educated lawyers. Professor Tillman went to Harvard Law School. Professor Blackman is a graduate of Penn State and George Mason University Law School. Seth Tillman teaches at the University of Ireland, Maynooth. Professor Blackman teaches at the South Texas School of Law. Their argument is that the whole different parts of the Constitution. And they say that the president is not an office under the United States, and he is not an officer.
So what they're saying is that this clause, the disqualification clause, covers 99.9% of the executive branch, except the most important part of the executive branch.
It is quite an interesting argument.
So what he's saying, basically, is that everybody had thought one way for 200 years under their constitution, but for 150 years under this 14th Amendment, that the president is an office on the United States and that the president is an officer. In fact, Mordecai, what does the Constitution say about the president? Can you find something that tells me what the Constitution says?
Article 2, Section 1 of the United States Constitution states, "The executive power shall be vested in a president of the United States of America." United States of America. "He shall hold his office during the term of 4 years, and together with the vice president, chosen for the same term, be elected."
Okay, what does he hold?
He holds his office.
Okay, so if he holds an office, that it makes it the
office of the president.
Yes, so how do these scholars read out the office of the president from Article 2? So is this an extreme? Is this not an extreme reading of the Constitution? Like, isn't this kind of like what you do to your parents when you find some loophole or you know, oh, I found a loophole?
I would not say this is a loophole. I would not say this is an extreme reading. It is an argument. But it seems like an argument that no one had been making prior to 2008.
So they've been making this argument throughout the court case, and at least, is this what Trump in Colorado also said?
Trump said is in Colorado. The judge, the district judge, actually agreed. Yes. It does seem like she agreed because she said the 14th Amendment text excluded the words president and vice president, and she hung her legal hat on that. Additionally, the judge made a clear statement. She said the court is reluctant to embrace an interpretation which would disqualify a presidential candidate without a clear, unmistakable indication that such is the intent of Section 3.
All right. And her argument, this is what the Supreme Court of Colorado reversed, right? The lower court ruled that the president was not an officer of the United States and not covered by the 14th Amendment, Section 3.
The Supreme Court of Colorado reversed this finding of law. The Colorado Supreme Court, after a review, said that at the time of drafting, everyone would understand that officer wrote clearly includes the president. They also hold weight to the U.S. Attorney General at the time, who explained that this phrase officer meant anyone in the general sense across legislative, executive, and judicial branches. It also provides much weight to the historical context that it was the betrayal of previously loyal members of the government.
Okay, Amy, I know that... Okay, Amy, we spent a lot of time on this. I just have one more question. I think your time here is coming short. Maybe two more questions. First, did any former Confederate oath breakers run for president?
No, they did not. I think they knew that they were disqualified.
So doesn't the fact that they that the Confederacy didn't try to put forward that no party put forward former presidents, I'm looking at Wikipedia right now, through all the post-Civil War years, no former Confederates ran for president. So it's a shame that Seth Barrett Tillman did not exist at the time of Jefferson Davis, or Jeffrey D. would have run for president, apparently.
I think Jefferson Davis may have liked to have run for president. Things were a bit different that day. Why wouldn't someone like Jefferson Davis run for president and gain some significant electoral votes?
Which I think is an absurd notion that Jefferson Davis was eligible to run for president. Okay, so it seems that absurd that if only Jefferson Davis had Seth Barrett Tillman and Josh Blackman assisting him, he could have certainly run for president in like 1868, 1872. All right, Amy, what is your conclusion?
I think, and we have talked about this time and time again, we cannot mention enough how messed up this conversation is. We are debating a major presidential candidate for breaking the Constitution or committing insurrection. I think the intention of the drafters in their language should back up that a presidential candidate can be disqualified.
Okay, but the issue that I have is both sides have presented an argument that the Supreme Court could hang their hat on, right? There's some weight, there's some substance that on either side that the Supreme Court could take.
Yes, both sides have provided ample hope to support any arguments that the Supreme Court wants to read. And that is the other argument to be made against what you are saying, how not. We didn't get into this. How is this enforced against the presidency? So the Supreme Court could say that you need to pass a law to enforce this against the presidency. We didn't get into this. How is this enforced against the presidency? So the Supreme Court could say that you need to pass a law to enforce this against the presidency. I don't buy into them. But if you are looking to buy into them, this is how we get a Supreme Court that, rather than look at the whole picture, they use biased logic to rule the way they want to.
Right, right. I think that we all kind of see where this could be headed, right? I mean, thank you, Amy. I hope that you learned something in doing your research.
I hope that those scholars who are making the arguments will get views together because they are really making some passive aggressive attacks.
Okay, thanks. Thank you. Okay, Mordecai. Man, so thanks for putting up with us. It's now your turn to get the floor.
So thank you, Senator Jim. Amy covered the law. I will cover the facts of the case, Senator Jim. Can you read me the 14th Amendment?
Okay. 14th Amendment. No person shall be senator or representative in Congress or elector. You want to do it in my Reddit voice? No person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or elector of president and vice president or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state who previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislator or as an executive or judicial official of any state to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. But Congress may, by a vote of 2/3 of each House, remove such disability.
It's clear, isn't it? So the crux of the issue, Amy talked about the interpretation of the law. What's the interpretation of the facts? Did President Trump engage in insurrection or rebellion?
Yes, and we're going to ask you, Mordecai, in your research, did President Trump engage in insurrection?
This fact has been looked at by multiple courts. It was looked at by Colorado, and it was looked at by Maine, and now in the court of Mordecai. And we have all declared that President Trump engaged in insurrection. Period. End of sentence. Donald Trump is an insurrectionist. Donald Trump will always be an insurrectionist.
Okay, I will bite on this. So, you just said President Trump was an insurrectionist. He engaged in insurrection. So on January 6th, what did President Trump do?
President Trump gave a speech.
And giving a speech is insurrection?
This is a critical key talking point that Republicans and Trump supporters bring up. They like to say that giving a speech isn't an insurrection.
Yes, exactly. Isn't what Trump's being accused of is simply giving a speech on January 6th?
You're good at this. You're really great at this. Let me take over. Let me take this over for 10 minutes. If all Donald Trump did between Election Day and January 6th was give a speech on January 6th. Give one single public speech. One maybe close to an insurrection-like speech. Maybe he wouldn't be in so much legal trouble. What you and what Trump supporters are doing is simple saying that all Trump did was one speech. That is false. Does it count as insurrection to systematically attempt to overturn a state election? Does it count as insurrection to foment anger in the months ahead of January 6th? Does it count as insurrection to pressure state officials to do something and find the votes? Voter fraud argument. Switching the results via the electors to the Electoral College. Trump wanted Mike Pence to switch the results in the vote count when the election was certified. Was it just one time? No. Donald Trump was pressuring Mike Pence from January 4 to switch the electoral slates. Here it is. Play clip 6.
Are they saying hang my pants? Oh, they're saying hang Mike Pence.
Please give this the serious attention it deserves. Much of what I'm saying and much of what the courts have looked at is based on the January 6th report from Congress. In fact, by my count, every court that has looked at the question of whether Trump is an insurrectionist has weighed in and agreed with me.
Okay, for people who have not been paying attention, I think... And a lot of people don't pay attention to this detail, so I think you need to expand upon this. Can you share it with us in 3 minutes? Give us the 3-minute summary of how Trump is an insurrectionist.
Before the election, Donald Trump made a decision that, regardless of the results, he would declare himself victorious. This is what many people say the big lie. The big lie is that Trump really won the election. The big lie is that there was massive election fraud in key battleground states. The big lie is that at some point, Donald Trump was winning, and then all of a sudden, he was losing. The big lie is that Joe Biden and Democrats stole the election. The intent of the big lie was ultimately to get state legislators to replace their Biden electors with undemocratically Republican-appointed electors. Who would switch the state electoral college results from Biden to Trump? He spent all of his post-election time pressuring state lawmakers to implement this plan. This is why he is indicted in Georgia. Legit, actual criminal charges. January 6th was just a culmination. But first, spreading the big lie, he built up an anger, a righteous to them anger in his followers. He deceived them. Many of them are still deceived for 2 months, but especially from December to January 6th, he pushed this out. It was repeated by sympathetic media. Sympathetic social media. January 6th was just the key moment. According to the big lie, if the election was certified on January 6th, if Biden won, then the big lie would win. We wouldn't have a country anymore. America would be dead.
Okay, yes, I'm familiar with the argument, right? So if Biden can steal the election, then we don't have a country, right? So we've got dead country walking. So to be fair, every president, I'm not sure if Hillary did that, but that's been the key theme in the Trump elections. We won't have a president if they don't win, right?
Yes, but his followers, his supporters, they ate up the big lie. Influencers pushed the big lie. Here is clip 7. This is Donald Trump on election night. He started pushing the big lie. This is November 3rd. He lists all the states, all the key states. This is premeditated on election night.
And we were getting ready for a big celebration. We were winning everything, and all of a sudden it was just called off. It's also clear that we have won Georgia, but most importantly, we're winning Pennsylvania by a tremendous amount of votes. These aren't even close. It's not like, oh, it's close. with 64% of the vote in, it's going to be almost impossible to catch. And we're coming into good Pennsylvania areas where they happen to like your president. I mean, it's like very good. So we'll probably expand that. We're winning Michigan, but I'll tell you, I looked at the numbers. I said, whoa. Wow, that's a lot. By almost 300,000 votes, and 65% of the vote is in, and we're winning Wisconsin. And I said, we're winning. We don't need all of them. We have so many. We had such a big night. You just take a look at all of these states that we've won tonight, and then you take a look at the kind of margins that we've won them by. And all of a sudden, it's not like we're up 12 votes and we have 60% left. We won states, and all of a sudden, I said, what happened to the election? It's off. And we have all these announcers saying, what happened? And then they said, oh, because you know what happened? They knew they couldn't win, so they said, let's go to court. And did I predict this, Newt? Did I say this? I've been saying this from the day I heard they were going to send out tens of millions of ballots. I said exactly, because either they were going to win, or if they didn't win, they'll take us to court. So Florida was a tremendous victory, and all of a sudden everything just stopped. This is a fraud on the American public. This is an embarrassment to our country. We were getting ready to win this election. Frankly, we did win this election. We did win this election. So our goal now is to ensure the integrity for the good of this nation. This is a very big moment. This is a major fraud in our nation.
In fact, Donald Trump hired a dedicated team of lawyers to push this. You remember the Rudy Giuliani press conference? Everyone remembers what a disaster, but what did he say? Fraud on America. It was stolen. We won the election. This all started in November. January 6th started in November. You cannot even lengthen. Another minute and a half. Listen to his claims. These are from November, Senator. These really are serious allegations against American elections themselves. Here is Rudy. Clint, hey.
So I'm here on behalf of the Trump campaign as an attorney for the president to describe to you the first part of a situation that is extremely, extremely troubling, first of all for the state of Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and then for a number of other states. And these lawsuits will be brought starting on Monday. As a friend of mine says, I don't believe in conspiracies, but I also don't believe in coincidences. Kind of funny that all Republicans were rejected here, and all Republicans were rejected in Pittsburgh, and it amounts to about, just about the 700,000 votes that President Trump was ahead by 2 days ago that disappeared. And we have no way of knowing, because we were deprived of the right to inspect, if a single one of those ballots is legitimate. That is unheard of. It's illegal. It's unconstitutional. And we will be bringing an action challenging that. But I wanted you to get the flavor of it here in Philadelphia, because we also have to alert the people of Pittsburgh that the same fraud was done to them as here. And I'll also add, same thing was done in Georgia. The same thing was done in Michigan. The same thing was done in North Carolina.
Now, I want to stop here. The Trump campaign filed a lawsuit in Pennsylvania. Here's what the judge, federal court judge, wrote. In this action, the Trump campaign seeks to discard millions of votes legally cast by Pennsylvanians from all corners, from Greene County to Pike County and everywhere in between. In other words, plaintiffs ask this court to disenfranchise almost 7 million voters. It goes on later. One might expect that when seeking such a startling outcome, a plaintiff would come formidably armed with compelling legal arguments and factual proof of rampant corruption.
How many similar lawsuits did Trump file?
I want to name the key battleground states. Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, Wisconsin. If you're in those states, I repeat, if you aren't in those states, Trump tried to throw all the Biden votes away.
Did you just play us the Kraken, the Release the Kraken lawsuit? These are the people behind the Release the Kraken. All right, so Kraken, basically the Kraken turned out to be nothing, right? Turned out to be, they turned the Kraken to the tadpole.
Not so fast. You like this podcast, right? Well, President Trump had podcasts in place in 2020. Many right-wing conservative podcasts repeated, amplified, and boosted the false election claims. Even many moderate podcasts in the time after the election. I want to name podcasts that made false claims.
All right, I want to clarify something here on the Senator Jim podcast. I'm committed to absolute truth, like I said. And I know other people make that term, but I'm here to inform, I'm here to entertain, but I'm also here to represent truth in politics. So way too many political podcasts, they just spew lies. So I don't even know if I want to name them, but who are the podcasts that were found, Mordecai, to amplify the election lies?
Charlie Kirk, Michael Savick, Daniel Horowitz, Clay Travis, and Buck Sexton, Bannon's War Room, Sean Hannity, Mark Levin. I'm not going to name them all.
Okay, so you just heard him read a list. And some of these people actually show up on like Fox News and other sources. So just be careful if you're getting news from these sources. So I'm not saying that everything that these people might say is false. However, in the 2020 election claim, these are like the number one people that were purveying disinformation and misinformation about the election. In fact, I remember following Charlie Kirk in 2020. I remember looking at his arguments and just laughing at what he was saying about the whole fact that, oh, all of a sudden these, you know, the Trump was leading the election and then all of a sudden these Biden votes get dropped at like 2 a.m. That's totally a fabrication of how the election results are counted and reported. It has nothing to do with people finding votes for Biden or Trump. Okay, sorry to hijack that. Sorry to hijack.
I want to go back to the court cases. Wisconsin, Georgia, Michigan, Arizona, Nevada. Let's start with Wisconsin. Trump tried to invalidate over 200,000 voters in Dane and Milwaukee County. The courts ruled in Wisconsin. The Trump election lawsuit is without merit.
Okay, so Wisconsin's done, right? Without merit?
Arizona. Trump alleged election misconduct, illegal voting, and fraud. What Arizona found is that the Arizona election was 99.45% accurate. No discrepancies and statistically negligible errors.
Okay, that's very interesting that you just said, right? 99.45% accurate. The elections are 99. Arizona is found to be 99.45% accurate. Have we ever heard Trump, his followers, or all those podcasters that were spreading lies, have we ever heard them say that, hey, the Arizona election was over 99% accurate? You know, if you were playing the lottery and you take 99% odds, right? You take those odds.
You correct. In fact, Trump and his followers continue to act like the election was stolen. In states like Arizona, the results were 0.55% off. These findings were approved by the court.
So what about the media? Shouldn't the media go out and correct these blatant lies and say, you know what? Hey, we know that Donald Trump says there was fraud, but you know what? They've all been found to be 99%. All the electricians did audits, and they're all found to be 99% accurate. I mean, I guess there's no obligation to say, well, actually, when it comes to states like Arizona, Wisconsin, etc., all the fraud that Trump claims to exist, that fraud doesn't exist.
No. Trump continues to attack the government and the election system.
Okay, sorry to interrupt. Three more states. Georgia, Michigan, Nevada. But, I mean, I think we already know that no courts found any evidence of a stolen election.
Quickly, Georgia. No evidence of election fraud. In Georgia, one of the cases, the ruling stated to interfere with the result of an election that has already concluded would be unprecedented and harm the public in countless ways. Michigan, quote, post-election audits conducted by the Bureau of Elections and county clerks found no examples of fraud or intentional misconduct by election officials and no evidence that equipment used to tabulate or report election results did not function properly when properly programmed and tested. Election fraud claims were so widespread that a conservative group put out their own report in July 2022 that concluded, "We urge fellow conservatives to cease obsessing over the results of the 2020 election and to focus instead on presenting candidates and ideas that offer a positive vision for overcoming our current difficulty."
Okay, you know what? I don't know that report that you're talking about has gotten completed what it was accomplished. If there's still a bunch of people, Republicans, basically they're talking about election fraud all the time.
But it was also very comprehensive and tabulated a bunch of information about the election fraud claim.
Okay, I mean, so we're kind of going off on a tangent, right? But you're allowed to challenge elections. You're allowed to file court cases, right?
Yes, but Trump dealt off of those court losses. When you lose in court, that's supposed to be it. Instead, he built an organization, Stop the Steal. What do you think when you hear Stop the Steal? Okay, Stop the Steal had protests and rallies in these states. Storm the Capitol, Victory or Death. There were two Stop the Steal rallies prior to January 6th. Did Trump say, "Hey guys, you know, I lost the election. We're wasting our time. We're wasting our energy. It was a good campaign. I might try again in 4 years." I mean, what would you do, Jim, if you lost your election?
Okay, if I lost my elections, I would say, you know what, thank you, everybody. Thank you for supporting me. You know, I would give a dignified concession speech because, you know what, elections are elections. They're like the bedrock of our democracy, right? You know, I would be upset for a couple weeks. I might reflect on what went wrong. I might put out some type of, hey, this is what I did wrong. And then I would continue my life.
But you aren't Donald Trump. So in addition to the rallies, they also mobilize far-right extremists like the Proud Boys.
Oh my gosh. Are you talking about these Proud Boys? Play clip 10.
What are you, look, what are you saying?
I'm willing to do anything. I want to see peace.
Then do it, sir.
Say it. Do you want to call them? What do you want to call them? Give me a name.
White supremacists and
right.
Would
you like me to condemn?
White supremacists and right.
Proud Boys. Stand back and stand by, but I'll tell you what.
I mean, do I have to continue? Look, there's one man and one campaign that could stop all this madness. I'm not even going into the effort of the fake electoral slates in these same states. So we attempted, again, these are the states, Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. Six states. The campaign basically worked hard to try to overturn the electors, replace the electors, work with Republican lawmakers in those states to overturn the elections. Again, it's not insurrectionist to get a single speech on January 6th. It ain't even close if you look at it. They filed lawsuits that pushed this lie. Even when lawsuits failed, they did not stop. They kept on holding rallies. They got a large group of people riled up to come on January 6th. What did they think was going to happen? It doesn't get much more insurrection than let's overturn the election. Donald Trump didn't act alone. He had a whole slew of bad actors, but all those actors don't matter. Let's say Donald Duck was upset with housing, health care, and the state of the middle class. And Donald Duck organized a rally at the Capitol. And then they marched into Congress, disrupted a congressional session, and armed the mob. We would all agree that Donald Duck should be prosecuted, in addition to all the people who stormed the Capitol.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a fair point. If Donald Duck did this, private citizen Donald Duck did this, no question.
Have I convinced you guys?
Yeah, I'm absolutely convinced. So to wrap this up in a bow, to bring both sides of the story in, but between you guys, between Amy saying that there, you know, there is a clause, the Constitution says President Trump should be disqualified, between Mordecai saying, hey, look at all the facts surrounding this case, look at what he did. He's absolutely, Donald Trump should be disqualified based on the 14th Amendment.
100% yes.
Okay. We'll see how the Supreme Court rules on this case.
Jim, as we have all spoken, we expect they will create some loophole or some new legal rule.
Yes, yeah, I thank you on that dull note. Thanks for reminding me that, you know, sometimes the Supreme Court just likes to make stuff up. Or like I said, they're going to We'll see how they use the Constitution to destroy the Constitution. All right, thanks. Thank you, everybody. That was really informative. And to our listeners, I know things haven't been fast around here, but I hope that you enjoy the quality that we have and you enjoy the product that we're putting out. I will try to get things out sooner. It's just not easy in my busy schedule as congressman, as father, as husband, as doing all this other stuff that I have to do to get things out. So just thanks for listening, and I hope that you found this informative.
Breaking news.
News is breaking.
You broke the news.
I broke the news.
Breaking news.
News is breaking.
It's something newsy.
It's something newsy.
Okay, it's 1 month later, and we actually have a result. So the Supreme Court came in with the ruling. Amy, do you want to tell us how the Supreme Court ruled and how that lined up with our analysis?
The Supreme Court ruling reinstated Donald Trump to the ballot. We misnumbered our clips. So I think this is clip 10. Remember when I said this?
There's something there's some weight, there's some substance that on either side that the Supreme Court could take.
Yes, both sides have provided ample hope to support any arguments that the Supreme Court wants to read. And that is the other argument to be made against what you are saying, how not. We didn't get into this. How is this enforced against the presidency? So the Supreme Court could say that you need to pass a law to enforce this against the presidency.
Pass a law to enforce this.
You said that about 20 minutes ago on the podcast.
It was a month ago. Everyone expected the Supreme Court would reinstate Trump. They said that states cannot enforce the insurrectionist ban of the 14th Amendment.
This is great news for Jefferson Davis. So my analysis was correct. All Jefferson Davis had to do was get a better, more Confederate-friendly Supreme Court. And I'm pretty sure this is the most pro-Jefferson Davis Supreme Court that we've ever had.
It's unbelievable.
It's crazy.
And it's also scary.
I would like to mention, although the ruling was 9-0, the liberal judges wrote a separate opinion. They implied that a federal court could still bring the case up.
So let's be clear, the 14th Amendment has never been interpreted the way that the Supreme Court just interpreted it. And you shouldn't need Congress to enact a law to enforce provisions of the Constitution. That actually federal courts should enforce and help enforce provisions of the Constitution. So it seems pretty clear that the people that enacted this constitutional amendment, which is a heavy lift, they didn't want insurrections running for public office.
We never had this section interpreted either, because a party never ran an insurrectionist before.
And the reason that former Confederates never ran for president or vice president is that they knew they were banned.
Just another day to reduce the credibility of the Supreme Court.
So that's all that I've got. We're slowly lurching towards the Biden versus Trump showdown.
It's not too late for Nikki Haley, is it?
You know what, Mordecai? I don't know. It's until the nomination is, and I think Nikki Haley would probably win by a landslide right now based on the current position, but it's the choice of the Republican primary voters that are giving us Trump, and you know, they don't necessarily have to think about a general election, do they?